Zing Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, 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 and welcome to the Guy James Show. Thank you for joining us here this afternoon. Coming to you live from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida. Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area. Ah, yes. Actually, Estero. How many of you up north have heard of Estero, Florida? It's actually an incorporation in between Naples and Fort Myers, but it's not populated like Naples and Fort Myers. Actually, Naples and Fort Myers are both a stone's throw from the studio, Fort Myers being a little bit closer. Our studio is in Lee County, Florida, which is Fort Myers is the county seat. Anyway, why am I getting into the geography of the thing? It's another beautiful day here in paradise in the high 70s. Air's dry. Beautiful day. Hope it's a nice day where you are as well. Why am I getting all this humming noise here? Oh, well, I guess we'll have to just put up with it. Anyway, today, for those of you who like to keep track of history and historical events, today is the 28th anniversary of the murder of John Lennon, one of my favorite musicians of all time. I have often said that when they study music a couple of hundred years from now at a Heidelberg University or one of the famous music universities, and they study music, that they will in fact be studying Bach, Brahms, Beethoven, Berlioz, some of those folks, and McCartney and Lennon. I do believe that. It's music that will last forever. It's music that touched the heart. It was good music. And it's interesting that so many people back in the day when the Beatles first came across the Atlantic, and my father in particular, I remember so well when they came on the Ed Sullivan Show, my father, and oh my God, look at them. Look at that long hair on those guys. Ah, yes, we all heard that. And what a crazy thing it was when they came to the shores of the United States. I remember being in Cleveland, Ohio, when they came to Cleveland. I didn't go there to see them, but it so happened that they brought them, they landed at the airport, at Hopkins Airport, and then they brought them through downtown in a parade. And it was the thing to do to throw jelly beans at the Beatles. And my God, you talk about raining jelly beans. It was an amazing thing to see. And I was just up in the front, pretty much in the front of where the motorcade was going by, and there was such a crush of humanity behind me. I was really afraid that I was going to get shoved into the ongoing path of, yes, of the cars that they were in. I don't remember what kind of cars they were in. But anyway, it was an interesting time, and I'm glad that I had the opportunity to see the Beatles. I never got to see them in concert, but I was a big fan. And oddly enough, so that you know where I'm coming from musically, I like many, many different kinds of music. I play music. I sing. I enjoy my music. It's one of the great things in life, music is. And I am not a big fan of the rock and roll Beatles. I am a fan of the ballads. And I think Yesterday and Imagine are the kind of Beatles music that I like. And I picked out some Beatles music today, particularly John Lennon music, that I like. I'm not into the... And it was okay, the Yellow Submarine, and I Want to Hold Your Hand and all that sort of thing. That's fine. I listened to it. I remember when I started the university in the fall of 63, and you can check this if you doubt me, on the local top 40, all 10 of the top 10 songs were Beatles. All 10. I don't think that'll ever happen again, but it was an interesting time. And then along came the rest of the English invasion, came over the Rolling Stones and all those folks. So it was an interesting time for music, and I'm forever grateful that McCartney and Lennon in particular made their stamp upon the music world here in the United States. They made some wonderful, wonderful music that, as I've mentioned, I do believe will last forever and ever. So we'll do that from time to time today. We'll have a tune coming in. But 28 years ago today, John Lennon killed in the Upper West Side, right along Central Park, a place they call Strawberry Field now. He lived in a big apartment building. It's well known there, called the Dakota, a big black stone foreboding building. And John Lennon lived there. Trying to think of the guy's name. Mark Chapman. Mark Chapman was the name of the guy that killed him. Still don't know why, and will we ever know why? He is still in prison, I understand, and was denied parole once again last year. But a senseless murder of a great and wonderful talent. And I, for one, miss John Lennon, and will probably always miss him. He would have been 68 years old today. Or not today, but he would have been 68 years old right now had he still been living. But one of those crazy, crazy happenstances that happened in history that we have no idea why he was killed. We really don't know. The guy was supposedly a fan, this David Chapman. So anyway, I want to move on a little bit here, and I want to tell you that we're celebrating 6 years of the Guy James Show today. Actually, the anniversary was on the 7th of December, and we couldn't do it on, what was it, Sunday was the 7th. We couldn't do it then, so we're doing it today, the 6th anniversary. And I really didn't do anything special for the 6-year anniversary, but I did want you to know that we've been slogging away now for 6 years. It was the 7th of December, 2002. I've got a nice little plaque here on the wall, and thank you from those of you who gave that to me. It's very, very nice. Very nice. And I appreciate it very much. We've had 6 years of reporting on the ineptitude of the Bush administration. That's why we got to doing the show in the first place. We've had 6 years of reporting on one horrendous crime after another by these people. 6 years of hoping and praying that we could somehow make a difference. Well, it's happened. We have a fresh new administration taking over on the 20th of January. We have hope that he can turn things around. And we also know that things aren't going to turn around in a few days. And I hope we all realize that. It's going to take time. Perhaps as much time to dig out of this mess as it did to dig us into this hole in the first place. I hope not that long, but it is entirely possible. And patience is going to be difficult. Because we're hurting. As a nation, we are hurting, and hurting badly. Much of the country is hurting in one way or another, and we recently found that, what was it, last month, 533,000 jobs were lost last month alone, with another 200,000 or so that hadn't been reported the month before. Can you visualize that? I don't know, for some crazy reason. I always visualize crowds in the size of the Ohio State football stadium, which is a bit over 100,000, around 105. Can you imagine 733,000 people standing in the streets without jobs? Can you imagine that? I mean, that number sounds big, but imagine that many people gathered in one place. You could fill the seven largest football stadiums in the United States with that many people. 730,000. Just last month and the month before. And you can fill the top dozen or so stadiums full of unemployed people just from the year, you know, from this year alone. That's an amazing number. And I think it's something that passed the public by. I don't think when it was announced, what was it, a week ago today? I don't think the day it was announced that people could really appreciate that number for what it is. 533,000 last month and a couple of hundred thousand from the month before that hadn't been declared. It's an incredible number of people losing their job, losing their livelihood. And it's not like they went out and said, oh, well, I lost my job today, I'll go find another one. That isn't just a sign of hard times. 533,000 jobs lost in 1 month, and it may rise when we get the report next month. That's a sign of economic collapse. It's a sign of our society being torn asunder. It's a sign of hunger. It's a sign of poor medical care, if any at all, in these families. It's a sign that many of those folks are losing their homes, their cars, their pensions. Everything they own. Everything they had to look forward to in their lives. Think about that. Old people who planned on their homes being their retirement fund. Gone. Pensions that would provide the basic needs for a fundamentally decent standard of living. Gone. And what is it replaced with? It's replaced by the worry and the stress of not knowing if or when any help is going to be available. Stress. The terrible burden of financial stress and financial worry. Stress and worry so great that many people will consider whether or not it's worth it to keep on living. Thinking about throwing in the towel. It's too late for some of those folks. Many have given up hope. After being tossed out of your home by a bank who received billions of dollars of our tax money so that they can continue on paying stockholders and their executives obscene amounts of money, how much hope can one have? How much hope can one have if they see that the people, yes, we the people, are sitting by and allowing this to happen with nary a whisper? That's why the men and women in Chicago who are protesting the loss of their jobs are so important right now. And I see Barack Obama is backing them, and thank God for that. I hope they get the backing of every man, woman, and child in the United States because they stand for something important. And I hope they keep on raising their voices for financial justice. If I could go up there, if I could afford to go up there, I would go join them and help spread that message. Their message is simple, really. Do what is right by the working men and women of this country. Do what is right by the working men and women. The people who keep this place running. Forget the fat cats on Wall Street and K Street. Screw them. It's time to make war on these people who have so blatantly screwed the lunch bucket crowd out of everything they have so that they can have a palace in the Hamptons and a high-rise apartment on Fifth Avenue as well. I'm sick of seeing the limos and the $100 cigars while men and women all over this country are struggling to put a decent meal on the table for their families after a hard day's work, or maybe no work. It's unconscionable. It's worse than that. It's un-American. For greed, uncontrolled usury, the misuse of funds for other people's pensions and jobs is un-American. And it's time for a war on this un-American activity being perpetrated by these vermin who control Wall Street and corporate America. We're seeing it everywhere. And yes, we do need to do something about the auto companies right now, but we also need to do something to drive out the greedy bastards who caused it in the first place by putting the emphasis on their own salaries and bonuses instead of on the kind of product and the quality of product that they produced. Have you ever driven through the neighborhoods like Grosse Pointe, Michigan, to see what really has happened to the auto industry? Mega mansions inhabited by the fat cats who sit in the boardrooms of those companies, grabbing what they can for themselves and then asking for taxpayer monies to keep feeding their own personal greed. And make no mistake, that is what it's about. Do you think for one moment that those three automaker executives sitting there in front of the House committee the other day give a goddamn about the working people? Because they don't. They've showed that. They've gotten rid of a couple hundred thousand jobs in the last few years, even before this started. Fire them all. Fire them all now. We should not be giving a single penny to any huge corporation for a bailout without having the guarantee that the upper management is all tossed out the door. You lose massive amounts of money in your business, you are fired. Clear out your desk today. We get accused on the left of class warfare. You bet your ass it's class warfare. I'll tell it like it is. That is what it is. And we didn't declare this war. You and I. It was declared by the fat cats, the corporate America. It's us against them. And if we don't hit the streets in protest of what's going on, then we deserve everything they do to us. And I'm serious. It's time to flex our collective muscle. Yes, collective. Use that word any way you wish, but we've had enough. It's time to fight. It's time to march. By God, we did it once to get our way over something that we needed to correct back in the days of Vietnam, and it worked. We wore them down to the point where they had to end a horrible war that we'd gotten involved in and sacrificed the lives of hundreds of thousands of young Americans, just like they've been doing now. But we took to the streets, and we put a stop to it. And make no mistake about it, that is the sole reason that war ever stopped. It would be going on today if young men and women, people of all ages all over this country, hadn't hit the streets in protest. It's time for a revolt against what's happening right in front of our eyes. It's time to do whatever it takes to take back control of our government and our society in general. The corporate masters, the theocrats, the neocons, the greedy bastards who control Wall Street. It's time to show them who really owns this country. And if we don't do that, we don't deserve to live under the Constitution and the red, white, and blue. Because we didn't get this far along without the people guiding the destiny of this nation. We didn't win wars and didn't build the richest, strongest nation on earth by way of Wall Street. We did it with the blood, the sweat, the tears, and the hard work of the common man and woman. We did it together. Millions of us. Not a handful of those who think of themselves as privileged royalty. We, the people, built this nation, and we have to take it back from those who have stolen it from us. As I've mentioned, I'm going to Washington, D.C. for the inaugural. And I'm looking forward to it. There will be millions there for the ceremony. That's the prediction. I suggest a few hundred thousand of them plan on staying an extra day. An extra day to march in protest of what is happening to the working men and women of this nation. One extra day of at least a half a million or so regular folks marching around Washington, down the middle of K Street, and right down Pennsylvania Avenue ought to prove that we're serious about a class war. And I'm talking a class war. I'll admit saying it. As I mentioned, those of us on the left are often accused of waging class warfare. Well, that's exactly what I'm suggesting here. War against those who are ruining this nation. An election isn't enough. As the opening shot, to be sure, in this war. But we have to let them know we mean business. We have to let them know that we're demanding meaningful change, or else we'll be willing to do whatever is necessary to change it ourselves. We've allowed our representatives in Washington to do the talking for us, and that has not worked. It's time we demand that they work for us, or else. I hope these men and women, and we're going to have somebody on with us later on in the program today, coming to us from Chicago, a gentleman by the name of Fran Tobin, that's involved in this Chicago sit-in. They're getting a protest up to protest the Bank of America in Chicago. I see the state of Illinois has decided they will not be doing business with the Bank of America anymore. Good, that's a start. We also have other political news from Illinois. Oh, my God. Another governor. But I would like to see some people stay over after the inaugural and protest. Be a great thing. Been a long time. It's been too long. Now, I want to talk to you for just a moment about something pertaining to myself, pertaining to this show. I am sure I don't have to tell you that after the election, audiences of programs like ours and even the right-wing top dogs like Limbaugh and Hannity have taken a big hit. Listenership is down, interest is down. Right up to the election, things were building to a crescendo, and then, well, as we thought, a couple of days after it was over, everyone seemed to think, oh, well, we've won. We can relax now. That's not true. But where does a show like this go now? What do I do for content every day? How do I make it interesting and informative without having to do many hours of research every single day? I should ask, what kind of content does my audience want? Knowing that we have to be careful of what we hone in on because a single issue kind of bores the hell out of the other 90% listening. How do I make it bigger and better without a significant change? A significant change in the amount of funding we get from our audience. I've mentioned this before, and I do want to mention it again, and it's with great hesitancy I do mention it, but if only 1 in 100 people who listen to this program would help fund the show, we could grow and we could do some things needed to be heard on a national stage. And my thanks, my eternal thanks to those of you who have contributed to the show. You know who you are, and you know I'm grateful. But we only need one in 100. And I know that some of you must think, perhaps some of you think, that we get a large amount of contributions to the program each month. Well, I'm not going to embarrass myself and tell you the exact amount, because it would give a few righties I know cause to laugh their asses off. And they would, and they probably will, because they monitor this. But I will tell you this much. For over a year now, the contributions haven't been enough to pay for computer ink, for paper, office supplies, and the phone bill. It hasn't been 25% of what it takes to just pay the bills, let alone for a moment of my time. For 6 years now, I've been paying for most of the show out of my pocket, and now, just like much of America, I am not in a position where I can any longer afford to keep paying most of the expenses by myself. And so I'm in the terrible position of telling all of my audience that if it isn't worth a few bucks a month to you to hear this program, then it just isn't possible for me to do it anymore. And it pains me to say that. It pains me more than you could know, because I have dedicated 6 years to this. It won't be my decision. It'll be yours. And I'm very sorry, but that's just the way it is. And you don't know how sorry I am. But without a significant change in funding, this studio will, in fact, must, in fact, go dark at the end of January. So we're going to hang on till then. We're going to go to the inaugural and hope that the funding picture changes. But if it does not, that will be the end of this program. I'm going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Oh,
Imagine if the whole world had ever been able to take the lyrics to that song seriously. I know, I'm a dreamer. I'm just like Lennon. Well, I'm not like Lennon. I'm certainly not the musician he was. But I think along those lines. Just imagine Hmm. Could be a great place, couldn't it? Really could. All this probably puts me in a little bit of a melancholy mood today. I wasn't even aware this day was coming up. 28 years, you know, that's hard to imagine. Some of you listening weren't here 28 years ago. But it's hard to believe that's 28 years. My God, so much time has gone by. But we have some things to look forward to. I am convinced that Barack Obama will work hard to rebuild our economic system. And I know he's been talking about rebuilding our infrastructure, roads and bridges and all that, but I hope that he will, and I thought a lot about this, I hope he'll give some equal consideration to convincing the American people that something has to give, and we can't maintain the kind of lifestyle we've enjoyed in the past. And everybody said, oh, guy, here you go. Well, if you think about it, if you just look at the science of it, you just know that we can't keep on going the way we're going with this massive consumerism and eating up the planet the way we are. We can't continue to do it. Mother Earth's not going to stand for it. And building new roads and all is great. But I have to ask the question, if we put a lot of money into new roads, will we even be using those roads a lot in a few years? Will we be able to use the roads? Because, there's going to be a lack of fuel. The way it looks right now, there will be a lack of fuel. And don't be lulled to sleep about this current price of oil right now. If you think for a moment that gas is going to stay down where it is, or maybe even a little lower between now and Christmas, then I got that proverbial land and swampland in Florida to sell you, and believe me, it's not that far away from here. But I'm asking a serious question. Will the roads be used as much as they are now, 10 years from now? And right now, I don't think the American public can even conceive of living any other way than seeing the USA in their Chevrolets. Mass motoring is going to end in this country. It's inevitable. And if you think it through, you'll know I'm right. And it's only on fossil fuel is it going to end. And it's only a matter of time until it does. So I believe we'd be better off and maybe better served by fixing our rail systems and our harbors so we can move stuff better by boats and by rail. And I know that sadly it's human nature to try and rescue the present day lifestyle, which is a hell of a lot more comfortable and familiar to us than what's coming in the future, regardless of whether or not that lifestyle has any future. But like it or not, and we may not like it, because change is difficult sometimes. I'm one of those people, I'm not good at change in my personal life. Someone comes along, tell me I can't drive my car very much anymore, I'm not going to like it. If they can't tell me that I can't use energy for this, that, and the other thing, I'm not going to like it. If I have to change my lifestyle in a big, big, big way, I'm not going to like it. But it's inevitable. And we can move into it gradually. And things are contracting. Mother Earth's ecology will not support more human beings. Perpetually. We're going to run out of mineral and energy resources along with the destruction of our precious farmland at this current rate. And then we've got the change in the climate to deal with, whether the crazies want to believe it or not. And so I believe Barack Obama needs to be urging the nation to understand how severe are the changes that need to be made. I don't think people are getting it at the moment. And I think they've got to understand. They've got to understand that we must retrofit American life so as to comply with the realities that we're facing. And those realities are coming fast, folks. They're coming very fast. What's it going to take? Is it going to take, how high will the price of gasoline have to go? And I understand a lot of you are listening to me right now. My God, it's down to $1.50 a gallon. It's still $1.79 here, but it's dirt cheap compared to what it was just a few short months ago. But those of you that understand the economics of the petroleum business and the futures market and all that, you know why it's down. And if you understand the economic conditions we're in right now. But those of you that know the situation and read about the situation and keep yourself learned on this issue, know that this low price isn't going to do anything to make more oil in the ground. It is inevitable that it's going to dry up and be gone someday, the market. So how long will we wait? How many years will it take? I mentioned last week about President Kennedy. And we have Detroit bemoaning the fact that we don't have the technology to build green cars right now. We don't have the technology. And I'm reminded, and I don't want to bore you, but I'll bring it up once again. I'm reminded by President Kennedy giving that great speech saying that we will put a man on the moon by the end of this decade. Think about that. If we could do that, and we did it, we can tackle this. But we're going to have to first get serious and understand what kind of problems we're facing here. And just retooling the old way of doing things in this country is not going to work. I know we all long for the good old days, and we hope to perpetuate the lifestyle that we're living or have lived in the not-too-distant past. But the time is a-coming, folks, and I don't mean this as a doom-and-gloom thing. I think it's just time that we understand the realities of what is facing us. Things will be different, maybe not worse, but different. I don't mean to say worse. And the time to start preparing for that is now. Today. And I thank you, Elo, on the chat room for putting up that wonderful quote in conjunction with what I was mentioning about John F. Kennedy. We choose to do these things not because they are easy, but because they are hard. And folks, that was coming up on 50 years ago that he said that. And we're much more advanced, technologically speaking, than we were at that time. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a physicist. I don't know what the challenges are. But I do know that there's the brain power and the will by many people to get this job done. And so I don't think just pouring money into the old infrastructure and patching everything up is going to do the job in the long run. Yes, let's do what we have to do to put a Band-Aid on things and keep it going now. Or as we used to do down on the farm, a little chewing gum and baling wire, you know what I mean, a little duct tape. That way we can keep things humming. We've got to get better prepared for what's in the future. We have to. Let's head on over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, guys, Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, and the transition, the end result will not be all that bad. Matter of fact, you'll be like, how was I able to tolerate this so long? You remember last week I was talking about my commute to and from work?
Yes.
And how great it is?
Mm-hmm.
And it's great, you know, it really is. You know, it's I understand, you know, the thrill and the freedom and the Jack Kerouac fantasy of the open road, but, you know, commuting on a bus or a train, reading your book and, you know, communicating with different people and walking is just as good, if not even better.
Well, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder there, certainly, but I agree. That's kind of fun to do. I do it when I'm in Washington. It's the only place I really have a chance to do that, get on the metro and ride and take a book along or your MP3 player and listen to some good music. But I love the open road. I do. But that's something we're just going to have to give up, I think, doing that for pleasure.
Also, even that you can do, but we just got to change the stuff we do it on. Like, instead of gas, sugar cane.
Well, we, you know, over the years we've personalized everything. You know, when the pony cars first came out in 64 and 65, the Mustang and then the Camaro and all that, I remember so many, they really pounded away the fact that now we had personal cars. We didn't have to be like everybody else and have just a Ford or just a Chevrolet. We could have all these new models and we could personalize the experience. Well, I guess we've gotten a little too far off the track with some of that personalization. My God, how many car models do you suppose we manufacture in this country right now? I don't know.
I don't know, but because the other day I just saw it. It's called a Shelby, which is a souped-up Mustang.
Oh, yeah. And I owned one of those when I was young. It was a thrill, but it also didn't get very good gas mileage. Of course, when you're young and gas was 30 cents a gallon, you didn't worry a whole lot like about that. Different story now.
Because they're going for like $200,000, I think?
Yeah, he's got one that's really expensive. Really expensive. And I would be lying if I said, if I denied the fact that I like to get in a car like that and hit it. But, you know, just not that practical anymore.
Yeah.
Not. Got to change with the times, I guess.
Yeah. But, you know, I just want to add that, you know, change is not necessarily a bad.
That's right. And I'm one of the worst. I am one of the worst. Boy, there's certain things in my life and those that know and love me will tell you that I'm as hard-headed as they get as far as changing some things. I want this setting here and this to be just right and everything. Don't you change it. But like everyone, I'm going to have to get used to a few things. Hey, you know, we've all changed as far as going into the computer age, haven't we?
Well, I haven't, so.
You haven't?
I grew up on it.
Oh, well, okay.
I'm sorry to rub it in.
Smart guy.
I'm sorry to rub it in.
Grew up on it. You know, that was a big thing for me. I don't know how many years ago it was. I got online and everything. I suspect somewhere around 8-9 years ago, something like that. But it was like, woo, a whole new world. Now it's a worldwide, like I told somebody last night, take my TV and take it away if you want to, but don't you even think about taking my computer. Uh-uh.
And, you know, it opened up a whole new world to you.
Oh, my. Oh, has it ever. Has it ever. The world's at your fingertips now. And honestly, could in my wildest dreams when I was young, could never have dreamed about. I remember very well when my father made the expenditure to get us a set of World Book Encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, man, you know, we have arrived. We have encyclopedias. So we don't have to go to the library for this, that, and the other. Little did I know that you could put the encyclopedia on a disc today. And, you know, it's incredible. It is. And I love it.
You know, I think, you know, because I'm currently working on a manuscript, if it wasn't for Google, Wikipedia, I wouldn't have been able to do it.
You'd have to trudge on down to the library.
Exactly.
And
really
hunt and hunt and hunt and oh yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Made life a lot easier, you know. But I don't know, they still need libraries.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, for to store rare books, you know.
That's
and
right.
All that.
And again, the libraries will change.
Yeah.
They'll change into something different than they are now. Someday, everybody around the world will be online or have access to it at least, and libraries will change. Their function will change, but you're right. I think we will always need them. They can show us those old-fashioned things called books. Have them on display. Books. Can you imagine some days people saying that people actually sat around with these things in their hands with all these pages in them? How cumbersome. I don't know. I don't know where it will all go, but I like to think like that.
Well, it's going to happen. You know, I did my first audio book the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And it does help me multitask.
Oh, yes. 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 I see Ray's posting something on the chat room right now. Thank you, Ray. That reminds me. It doesn't mean that it's all positive. And I remember when the little handheld calculators came out. I think that it's important for people to learn how to think. And unfortunately, there is a side to some of this that's taken away some of our cognitive learning abilities as far as kids doing math and all that. I don't know how important it is for people to have multiplication and division tables nowadays, but because they do have access to all these machines to do it for them. But I always thought that helped develop your mind. So in some ways, the kids are missing out on a few things. Maybe that's an old-fashioned way to look at it, but we'll see.
Okay, so that's all I have to say, Bert.
Hey, Kevin, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you, my friend.
You too.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Ah, yes, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We'll be back in just a moment. John Lennon for you.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home, and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever, and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy, you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion and sex and TV. And you think you're so clever and classless and free. But you're still fucking peasants as far as I can see. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still. First you must learn how to smile as you kill. If you want to be like the folks on the hill. working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
A working class hero, something to be, indeed. 866-546-5254. Well, I guess wait with your calls until after the top of the hour. We'll be having news coming up here in just a moment or two. Lots of news right now pertaining to working conditions. That gang up in Chicago, I'm so proud of them. And I shouldn't refer to them as a gang, that group in Chicago. Of hardworking people that are boycotting and sitting in, not leaving until they get their just rewards. I hope that everybody helps them stay until hell freezes over, until they do get what's coming to them in the way of their pensions, their vacation pay, and even some severance pay. It's unconscionable for someone to come along and say, hey, we're closing the shop 3 days from now or whatever. It's unconscionable. There's no reason for it. And if Bank America is at fault, then screw them. Certainly the management had to have some idea that things weren't looking good. But they should be paid every last dime that they have coming to them. They should not be stuck. What kind of an example does that set? And we have the fat cats on Wall Street keeping their jobs, and I hate to belabor the point and keep bringing them up, but they are the example that was set, are they not? Yes. Oh, they're too big to fail. These little 250 guys in Chicago, men and women, they're not too big to fail. Screw them. Let them go. Is that the attitude? No. That should not be the attitude. We'll be having a guest on the program in around a quarter past the next hour. A gentleman is in Chicago, and he's the executive director of Chicago Jobs with Justice. He isn't, but his friend is. Anyway, they're there for this thing. They're going to have a protest beginning at noon Chicago time in front of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. And we're going to talk about those folks and the plant closing that they're involved with up there and how their employer, their bank, whatever, is trying to take what they have, what they've earned. It's not bad enough. Everybody's trying to get concessions from the unions to fight them down to nothing, to try and destroy the unions. Now they want to take what they've already earned. We will talk about some union jobs and so forth when we come back next hour. Right now we're going to go to news. Don't go away. You listen to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As Congress ponders throwing the auto industry a financial lifeline, some in Congress want that lifeline to also be a hangman's noose around the neck of the UAW to destroy wage and benefits gains from decades of workers' struggles. The UAW may seek a seat on the GM board and a stake in the company in return for concessions. The White House and Congress, meanwhile, are reportedly close to a deal as House Democrats work on a draft of the bill that would grant emergency federal loans to the U.S. auto industry.
We just can't understand how that a bank that was given $25 billion for bailouts could not bail us out.
Chicago's sit-down striker Lalo Munoz. UE workers are continuing their sit-down strike occupation of a Republic Windows factory in the Chicago area. The tactic won great success for the union movement in the 1930s, helping to spark a massive surge in industrial unionism. The Chicago sit-downers are protesting an illegal plant closing and demanding the money they are owed before they leave the plant. Alvin Macklin is one of the sit-downers and vice president of UE Local 1110.
We as workers here, we can't understand how that they were given all of this money to bail out and to help small businesses. And yet when we need help, they just refuse us help.
For those of you keeping track, there have been more than 40,000 layoffs at America's top 500 largest companies in the month of December. Jesse Russell reports.
Forbes has begun keeping track of the number of layoffs at America's 500 largest public companies. The total for December, as of Monday, December 8th, is 40,662. That total includes Dow Chemical's Monday announcement of cutting its workforce by 11%, or letting go of roughly 5,000 jobs. The company will also close 20 plants. Only 8 days into the month, overall layoffs for the month of December are averaging a little more than 5,000 cuts a day. Also announcing major job cuts on Monday was Belgium-owned InBev, who recently absorbed Anheuser-Busch. The company plans to reduce its U.S. workforce by 6%, or 1,400 jobs. 75% of those jobs are expected to come from St. Louis. When InBev absorbed Anheuser-Busch earlier this month, the company promised to keep the North American headquarters in St. Louis open and to not close any breweries. The St. Louis job cuts will come from salaried employees at the company's headquarters. Here's today's economic report. At least the economy is consistent. The U.S. job market experienced a slight decline in November, with employers cutting 533,000 jobs, the most in 34 years. November marked the 11th consecutive month of job losses. The Conference Board predicts that as the U.S. economy enters 2009, jobs will continue to be lost at a brisk pace. In the report, the organization's senior economist said as many as 3 million jobs will likely be lost by mid-2009.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
No, the third switch!
Throw it again! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? In my creation!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show. A Tuesday edition. That's right, Tuesday, December 9th. How many of you are out Christmas shopping? I don't mean right this minute, but how many of you did the Black Friday thing, have been picking up a little bit here and there, has done Christmas shopping? How many? Anybody? I'm hearing that a lot of people, and I read an article today, that a lot of people who are financially just fine are cutting back this year as well. Kind of maybe in solidarity with others. I don't know. They see that that's the trend, and they see that that's something they might do. Now, it's not that I feel, don't get me wrong, if people are cutting back on their holiday shopping, that's fine by me. I hope retailers survive and all that, but we've gotten a little out of control, don't you think? We have definitely gotten out of control over the years. We've just bought too much at Christmas time, and it's time to scale it back. And if you celebrate Christmas for the reason that Christmas is here in the first place, not make it a big deal about gifts. I've played that game. We've all played that game, I think, most of us anyway. There may be some of you who haven't, but it's time. It's time to scale it back, I believe. Hey, news out of Illinois today, and I know all of you have heard this already about Blagojevich, the governor of Illinois. I tell you, and I'm starting to hear that Rahm Emanuel might be behind some of this, and if he is, good for him. Federal authorities arrested Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich today and his chief of staff, John Harris, took him into custody this morning. They've been investigating. How stupid are some of these people? We sit around and say these politicians are really smart. How smart would you be if you knew that you were being investigated and had known it for 3 years? And you're in Patrick Fitzgerald's area. Wouldn't want the guy coming after me, although I'm not satisfied with what he did in the Valerie Plame thing. But I guess he did as much as he could do to hear him tell it. But you've been investigated for 3 years, and now it's found that you're trying to sell the Senate seat of Barack Obama's to the highest bidder, the way it looks, and what you can get in cash in front for your wife. There's a 76-page FBI affidavit alleging that Blagojevich was intercepted on court-authorized wiretaps during the last month, conspiring to sell or trade Illinois' U.S. Senate seat vacated by President-elect Barack Obama for financial and other personal benefits for himself and his wife. How stupid would you be, knowing you've been investigated for 3 years and you're on the phone making... I mean, wouldn't you think the FBI would be bugging your phone? My God, if I was in that guy's shoes, I'd have to be out in the middle of Central Park at 3 a.m. Meeting with somebody, and I would still be paranoid that I was being bugged. I can't believe it. He wanted somebody that would take the seat and give him, in return, a substantial salary for himself at either a nonprofit foundation or an organization affiliated with labor unions. He wanted his wife on paid corporate boards where he speculated she might get as much as $150,000 a year. And he wanted promises of campaign funds, including cash up front and a cabinet post or an ambassadorship for himself. I saw some place where he said on the phone he told somebody that this is golden, man. It's all mine. Fitzgerald said in a statement that the breadth of corruption laid out in these charges is staggering. I don't know. Blagojevich said that he knew that President-elect Obama wanted Senate candidate number one, and they're not saying who that is, for the open seat. But, to quote Blagojevich, they're not willing to give me anything except appreciation, expletive them, end quote. So I'm hearing that Rahm Emanuel was approached and spurned their offers and went and turned them in. That's what I'm hearing. If he did, good for you, man. Good for you. Representative Jan Schenkowski from Illinois, who's reportedly under consideration for the open Senate seat, said that she was absolutely shocked to hear the news. She said the prosecutor should, quote, have a really good reason, end quote, for going into Blagojevich's house and taking him into custody in front of his family. Well, I'm sure they did. Dare I say this? This is Chicago, after all. This is Illinois politics. Who was it that said Abe Lincoln must be turning over in his grave? Well, keep spinning, Abe. Man, oh man. Now, what's funny about this is, to me, anyway, I had this conversation on Saturday last, maybe Friday last, with a friend of mine who has this friend in Chicago, and I'm not going to mention any names, but he has this friend in Chicago who just went to Terre Haute Federal Prison in Illinois for some kind of corrupt, I don't know, gangster activity, okay? Really not gangster activity, but it was... I'm not thinking of the word right now. But he went to prison, he was sentenced, and he's been, you know, appealing it and all that, and finally he had to go to prison. So he turned himself into the federal prison in Terre Haute. And they have a bad, nasty-ass federal prison there, and then they have this little satellite prison off to the side where they put the white-collar guys and that don't do hard time, where they don't have, you know, bars on the doors or anything like that. They sleep in rooms. Anyway, to make a long story short, this friend of mine's acquaintance turned himself in. He went to prison and left his wife with nothing outside. She doesn't even know how she's going to get along. And he called my friend and bragged that he had dinner in prison with former Illinois Governor George Ryan, who's in that very prison. So I guess now he's going to have a chance to have lunch with two former Illinois governors, because they'll hang this guy. Blagojevich will go down, and they'll put it to him in a big way for doing this. I kind of wonder if he'll end up in a prison with no bars on it. Who knows? He shouldn't. Why is that? Why is that a guy like George Ryan or Blagojevich or any? Why do they go to a prison where there's no bars or anything? It's kind of easy on them, where they can work in the kitchen and play nice with people and not have to worry about hardened criminals around. Why is that? I don't know. I guess we'd all want that if we had to go to prison, but oh, anyway, that's my story this week. I thought it was so odd when I was told the other day that his friend had lunch with George Ryan, and now this opportunity comes up. I had no idea that I knew he was being investigated, but I didn't know it was this bad. Hey, we're going to take a break, and we're going to get our guest on the line, and we'll be right back.
One, two, one, two, three, four. Everybody talking about magic, all we are saying is give me some chance.
Ah, yes, indeed. All we are saying is give peace a chance. Commemorating the death of John Lennon 28 years ago today. We're back. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Thank you for joining us, everyone, this afternoon. Right now, we have with us on the line Fran Tobin. Fran, thank you for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
I had you recommended by a friend in Washington that told me that you were in Chicago and you're there to support the folks that have been, well, having what, a sit-in or a whatever you want to call it there to get what's coming to them, working men and women who once again have been tried to just push them aside, get them out, and not get what's coming to them. Can you tell us a little bit about the situation there right now?
Sure. In terms of background, about a week ago, workers at Republic Windows and Doors were informed with only 3 days' notice that their plant was going to be shutting down. And the expectation was that it would be shutting down last Friday. And the reason given was that Bank of America, which we may recall had gotten $25 billion in financing or giveaways, frankly, from the Wall Street bailout, was not going to extend their credit, was not going to provide a line of credit, so they were going to have no friggin' cash, and they were going to shut down and everybody was going to lose their jobs. To make matters worse, Bank of America, as the creditor and financier making financial decisions, said they would not make funds available to even pay the workers what they were already owed. Vacation time that they had accrued and earned, and severance pay that they're supposed to get, given that they did not get the proper notice for plant closing. So on Friday morning, the day the plant was going to shut down, the workers decided they were going to sit down, and so they've been occupying the plant since Friday. We're now on day five.
Are we in any jeopardy of the people that own this plant having them the cops go in and the authorities go in and throw them out yet, or where are we in this process so far?
Going into it, nobody really knew exactly what happened, but so far the company has been tolerant and has been participating in a negotiation. So yesterday, there was the first negotiation between Republic and Bank of America and the workers through their union. They're members of the United Electrical Workers. And so we haven't had the cops coming in. There's been, I think it helps, frankly, that there's been an outpouring of support, not only coalitions like Jobs with Justice that this union is a member of, but other supporters and activists from all around the city of Chicago have been coming by. People have regularly been there. There's been a strong presence. So there's a huge amount of support for the workers continuing. And thus far, which we're happy for, thus far there has not been any attempt to actually remove them from the plant.
Now, the owners of the company that supposedly can't get credit anymore, you say they're negotiating with Bank of America and the union there. What kind of leverage would this company had? Are they reorganizing under a different name? I heard there's a different name being put on the company. Can you tell us anything about any of that? Is that true?
Well, we don't have all the inside details of what they've done and not done. However, it does indicate, the information we have does indicate that the folks that were the leaders of Republic were looking for an opportunity to relocate and open up under a new name and expand business under a different name, doing a similar business, but paying workers less and trying to continue on that basis and trying to get out of their obligation to their own workers. It's not like Republic is somehow the faintly, it's not George Bailey we're talking about. We're talking about a company that's taken other public money and not necessarily always delivered on their promises. And the first response when the union found out that there was this possibility of closing was Republic blamed Bank of America. Bank of America blamed Republic. The workers were left in the middle being screwed, and so they felt like they needed to take this kind of action. At this point, having all the three parties in the room together is helpful to straighten out sort of what really can happen and who's responsible for what. And I think without this action and without the support the workers have gotten, that probably wouldn't have happened.
Well, it certainly can't hurt to have the president-elect of the United States coming out and saying that he's in support of them. Right there in Chicago, that has to be a big boost for them.
That's a huge step. I mean, imagine it's a sign of how different we could see things under a new administration than what we've had for the last 8 years. So that's certainly huge. In addition, several members of Congress have been coming by and supporting the workers. There are 15 members of the Chicago City Council yesterday had a press conference, and they announced that they're proposing that the city of Chicago cease doing business with Bank of America unless and until they do right by the workers. So because of the broad support and because, frankly, their cause is just. Their cause also exemplifies the crisis that we're facing all around the country. And the fact that this relatively small band of workers in Chicago stood up against, the forces of forces against them and are fighting back has really been an inspiration. So we're really glad that these political leaders have signed on to support them.
Can you give us a little bit of about the logistics of the deal going on there right now? Are all of the employees, ex-employees, all staying in the plant? Are they doing it on shifts? People bringing food to them? Can you give us a little, describe the scene for us a little?
Yeah, people are working on shifts. So much like they worked when the plant was open, they're still maintaining the place by shift. So there's always a crew on. And there are a few times when everyone comes together at the same time. There have been a number of times when organizations or just random individuals have come by and brought food, brought drinks, so they're able to sustain themselves while they're there. And again, so far there has not been an attempt to actually blockade the factory, though the workers are being very clear that they need to maintain proper security. And frankly, they're safeguarding assets that they share in the ownership. I mean, some of what they're owed needs to come out of those assets. So them making sure that everything stays in good shape is in their own interest and in helping to protect themselves.
Can you tell us a little bit about your organization, why you're involved in this, and about other things that you've been involved in similar to this?
Well, Jobs of Justice is a coalition of community, faith, labor, and student organizations, and the union that represents these workers is one of the member groups of Jobs of Justice, the United Electrical Workers. So they've been a very active part of our coalition, so of course we want to support our members as much as we can. Jobs of Justice has been around for 20 years promoting economic justice and worker rights. So we help to bring the faith community connected to labor unions and community organizations linking with faith and labor and students all together so that people can share each other's struggles, share each other's experiences, and support each other so that together we can build the movement for a new society that's really just and fair.
Facing an uphill battle right now with the losses of jobs that we're seeing with the tremendous pressure on to try and kill unions, I don't think there's any denying that the heat's been on now for nearly 30 years to try and destroy unions, and it's good to know that these men are getting support where they're at. And let me ask you, and I think I know the answer to this question, the Chicago Police Department, they're unionized, no doubt, aren't they?
They certainly are.
Okay. Well, I just wondered that. And how many employees are we talking about altogether here? Did I read somewhere around 250?
There's about 250 that are part of the sit-in. The company overall had close to 300 work people, some of those who were management. So it's close to 300 workers.
Go ahead.
I can mention one thing. You were talking about the importance of unions, and we wholeheartedly agree. You know, if these folks had not been unionized, they wouldn't have even been in a position to decide what to do. They would have just been on their own, out of luck. They'd have gotten nothing. But because they had an organization, and that organization, that union, had relationships with community organizations and faith organizations and coalitions like Jobs of Justice, because of that, there was the potential for challenging this injustice. And so it's really important that people are organized in the first place. And one of the things that we're doing, you said we have an uphill battle, and you're absolutely right. We have to undo 15 or 20 or more years of bad policy in the wrong direction. And part of what's happening this whole week is that all around the country, Jobs at Justice coalitions and other allied organizations are doing actions around the economic crisis that we're facing. As you said, there are thousands of people losing their jobs, hundreds of thousands. I mean, just last month, 500,000 people lost their jobs. I mean, it's massive. This plant is not the first plant that's gone down in America, but it's the first time that the workers stood up in this way, and I'm guessing it's not going to be the last time. But through this kind of national week of action, calling for a people's bailout, not a Wall Street bailout, we're looking to start building the kind of pressure and the kind of street action and street activity that we think is necessary to really turn the corner and bring about a new system.
What about public support there in Chicago? Are we seeing any protests, any gatherings there? What's going on in that regard?
It's really been heartening. Every day there's some kind of gathering and support gathering, either a rally or a protest or a vigil or something, where community organizations, faith organizations, just individuals that heard about it, they want to come down and help. People are bringing food. People are doing demonstrations. In several places around town, local groups have just spontaneously said, you know what, we want to form a support committee, and we're going to go and do a picket at our local Bank of America branch. And it's been really great that folks are doing that. In addition to that, around the country, I just got an email about an hour ago indicating that three more cities, folks have decided they're doing a mobilization and a rally at a Bank of America location in their city. And so that's the kind of pressure that we need on a huge mega bank like Bank of America if we're going to get them to actually listen to the people.
It's the only kind of pressure that works. You can talk and cajole all you want, but pressure like that is what ultimately gets the job done. Friend, thanks so much for being with us. You've done a great job of describing the whole situation and explaining it to everybody. I've got a better understanding of it now and a better vision of what's going on, and I hope that this goes on for as long as it takes for these people to get justice, and I think it will. I think there's a realization in this country that finally maybe enough is enough, and this movement by these brave workers there is showing us that it's a great example for everybody else, I think. Thanks so much for being with us, friend.
Thank you.
Yes, Jobs with Justice, and you have a website here we can tell everybody about.
Yes, www.jwj.org.
JWJ.org. Okay, got it. And we'll pass that on to everybody. JWJ.org. Fran Tobin from Jobs of Justice, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, that pretty much explains everything that's going on in Chicago. A good report by Fran there to know just exactly what the situation is. We have got to work in ways like this. It is no longer enough just to call your senator, your congressman, or complain, or call the company and complain. Pressure. Pressure is what it takes. No matter what way you're, if you want to boycott Bank of America, fine. That's what should happen to them if they're not willing to work with these people at all. This is a dastardly act on workers once again. This is a company that got $25 billion in bailout money, and they've got a hell of a lot of nerve shutting out 250 or so employees of what they've got coming to them. So, on the one hand, we'll put our hand out, Bank of America, and we'll grab all we can grab from the taxpayers. But when it comes down to doing the right thing for these employees, and that's not that many, 250 out of $25 billion of taxpayer money, there could have been, should have been something worked out. And this is a black eye on Bank of America, and I hope it ends up being worse than that. Once again, 250 people with families that have to go home and spend their meager earnings on a rent check or their groceries or their power bill. They can't even give them what's coming to them. They're not too big to fail. They're just 250 measly union workers in a Chicago. So what? So what? But when it comes to Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, AIG, all these people, hey, we can't give you enough money. We just can't give you enough money. Once again, that gives us an idea of just how far out of line things are in this country these days. I imagine that Congress may someday rue the day that they ever bailed out an AIG or passed on all this money to Wall Street, which now we're finding out a good deal of it is not accounted for. They will rue the day that they did that instead of doing something to help the people. So far, this bailout, if that's what you want to call it, to the AIGs and the banks and all that, it hasn't done squat for the working men and women of this country. Nothing. Credit hasn't eased up. In fact, what are they doing? They're sending people letters raising the interest rates on their credit cards. Yeah. It's working out good for the people, isn't it? Once again, I think we all knew who would get screwed in this deal. We knew it all along. We warned them all along what would happen. We knew it. 866-546-5254. Let's go back to John Lennon. We'll be right back after this. Let's do give the Media Matters a minute on the Bill O'Reilly radio show situation first.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, Fox News' Bill O'Reilly has confirmed he will no longer host his nationally syndicated radio program. In an AP article, O'Reilly was quoted as saying his show was not ideological, but, quote, fact-based, acting as a counterpoint to the popular Rush Limbaugh program. But Media Matters frequently demonstrated O'Reilly's show was often chock-full of fact-free claims and ideological rants. Here's a sample.
Every other place in America is off limits to you except San Francisco. You want to blow up the Koi Tower? Go ahead.
I just wish Katrina had only hit the United Nations building.
You know, Kwanzaa symbol. Maybe, is there a 50 cent that we have to put up or something?
I don't even want to talk about the far left. Barney Frank, disgusting, pointing fingers. It's you, you big fat toad. Dodd, sitting there. I swear to God, if they're in this room right now, I would hit them.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Power!
Yes, power to the people. Yes, another John Lennon tune. 28 years to go. Today, the passing of John Lennon, the murder of John Lennon. Senseless killing. Thank you for joining us today here on the Guy James Show. Say, I do want to mention to you that tomorrow we will have noted high-powered attorney Michael Ratner back with us, and he is going to explain to us about prosecution. Prosecution of some of these criminals that we think are, believe are criminals in the Bush administration, even Bush himself. What the prospects are for prosecution of these people after they leave office. So we'll have Michael Ratner with us tomorrow. I'm not sure about the time yet, but he and I had a discussion about it today. He was in court this afternoon and couldn't make it, but promised to be here tomorrow. And what he doesn't know about the situation probably isn't worth knowing. So you'll get the straight on that tomorrow from Michael Ratner, always a great guest, and once again, one of the noted attorneys here in the United States. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us here on the program. I really got a kick out of that Media Matters Minute with Bill O'Reilly saying that he was the counterpoint to Limbaugh, that his show was not ideological. Oh, that's good, Bill. That's good. That's really good. Giving up his radio show. I guess if you have the bucks that he's making on Fox TV right now, you don't need to bother with the radio program now, do you? And let's face it. I'll be honest about this. Writers and all, even though he's got a staff and writers for both shows, that's a grind, doing a TV show and then a radio show each day. Those of you who think it's easy, hey, you got to get up every morning, eat your Wheaties, do research all day long, find music, find audio clips, do all that, make sure your research is exactly correct, and then go do the show. It's not what you think. It's not just coming in and sitting down in the chair. Now, if you are able to just come in and sit down in the chair and do a 2 or 3 hour program, why, more power to you, but there's not many people that could do that, certainly. 533,000 jobs in November lost, and of course the update, that there's a couple of hundred thousand more in the update of the last couple of months before that. So we're starting to look at serious job losses, and we're starting to see about this auto industry. Where is the blame going by the right-wingers and a lot of people in this country? Of course, they're bashing the unions. That's where the fault must be. If there's something wrong in Detroit, it must be that damn United Auto Workers Union, right? Well, we expected to hear that. We are hearing that. We're hearing this all over about their $70 an hour and more, which is horse manure. And I think it's time to just set this straight about all this, all these lies. Let's tell them what it is. Lies and misinformation that these right-wingers come out with against union. Let's face it. Ever since Reagan got into office, I mean, they wanted to a long time before that, but they couldn't. They've wanted to bust the unions. They've wanted so bad to bust the unions and drive wages in this country down, down, down. And you know what? They've succeeded for the most part. Unions are only a shadow of what they used to be in this country. It's horrible what these people have done to the unions in this country. The unions aren't the problem right now. They are not the problem with what's going on in Detroit. They are not the problem with what's going on in Chicago with those people. They are the solution. I'm not going to sit here and say that unions have always been all just, you know, we've had the Jimmy Hoffa's, we've had those problems. But don't anybody ever tell me that the American middle class wouldn't have been built without the unions, because it would not have. And don't tell me that the minimum wage at least wouldn't be what it is now without the unions. Don't tell me almost anyone working in this country wouldn't be making what they are today, at least in manufacturing and many other jobs, without unions. Because whether or not you belong to a union or not is beside the point. It's what unions have done for the working men and women in this country. Without the unions, there would never have been a living wage for people in this country who worked hard. The lunch bucket Joe and Sally American. It would never have happened in the first place. And the idea that Reagan, and it did start with Ronald Reagan, make no mistake about it, he hated the unions, and he did what he could to bust them, and they've been doing it ever since. It was wrong. And they've been very successful at it. But the very goal of organized labor over the years was to create a middle class of Americans who could afford to go out and buy goods and live a decent life. That was the goal of organized labor. And if you don't understand about organized labor and where they came from, if you don't understand about Samuel Gompers and the historical people in the union and where they came from and why they came from it, then you don't understand what labor was in this country before the unions came along. Walter Reuther. The conditions were horrible. There were no benefits. There were no pensions. There were no minimum wages. There were no safety regulations. People worked in sweatshops, children, women, 12, 16 hours a day. There were no labor laws. It was the unions that did all of that. One at a time, we will never be successful in fighting corporate America as far as wages and benefits are concerned. But the unions joined people together and were able to bring them together in solidarity so that they could have some punch when it came to negotiations with their employers. And it worked. You take away all this mumbo-jumbo financial crap about these credit crises that are coming along right now. And it boils down to this. For about 30 years, the benefits for the working men and women in this country, the middle class people, the wages, they have either gone flat or they've fallen. And so what did people do? They had to turn to credit. And oh, the banks were more than willing to put out lots of credit for people. Another chance at usury. Another chance to make a fortune off the public, off the working man's back. And so with your wages flat, you turned to credit. You had to buy a house, a car, all the things you see advertised on TV that you think you need. You've been pushed off on people with advertising from Madison Avenue. Yes, we're in the middle of a crisis, a credit crisis. And if we don't figure a way out of this right now, this short-term credit crisis, and if we don't figure out a way for the people in this country to make a decent living, a standard to uphold a standard of living that they need to sustain themselves in this country, we're going to do it over again. I'm not denying that a lot of people shouldn't have taken on debt that they did. I'm not denying that. But a lot of people were forced into that. Because of stagnation of wages and the falling of wages and benefits and medical benefits. Think of how many people that work right now that used to have good medical benefits. Used to have really good medical benefits. Where have they gone? Have gone out the window. Profits were up. Costs were down. And they took most of that when companies were in Fat City with their profits, they took it right off the backs of the American workers and started bleeding them dry, started taking away their benefits, their pensions, lowering their wages, getting them to agree to less and less and less. And of course, we have to compete on a world market. That's true. But look at all the American companies. That have slaughtered the job market in this country by moving hundreds of thousands of jobs to China and to Mexico so that their profits could go even higher. Do I feel sorry for any of the people in management of General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler? No. Hell no. They should all lose their jobs yesterday. But the working men and women of this country, they don't deserve what they're getting right now. They sure don't deserve what they're getting right now. Starting back in the 80s when Reagan was in, and I blame it on Reagan. That's why, as you know, if you've listened to this program for a long time, I have no use whatsoever for the great Saint Ronald of Reagan. Never did, never will. Because I knew what he was up to right away. Many of us knew what he was up to right away. He was for lining the pockets of the rich and stealing it from the working men and women of this country. That's exactly what the great, venerable Ronald Reagan was all about. He didn't even hide it, but he did have a smooth way of delivering it, didn't he? But it started with him, in a big way. And they started deregulating things, and they started this anti-union movement. Oh, we don't need any intervention in the market. Let capitalism take off and run and do whatever needs to be done. No problem. It's all going to trickle down. Ah, yes, it'll trickle down. Let's make the rich even richer, and by golly, don't you know that all that money will trickle down just like a waterfall to all the people at the bottom. Man, that worked out well, didn't it? Didn't that just work out really well? Worked out well for those on top of the pyramid. Yes, indeedy. They did just fine. They got massive, massive bonuses and profit. I don't remember them sharing it and letting it trickle down any place. I hope those people in Chicago get everything that's coming to them. I hope they get some severance pay. I hope they get their vacation pay. Anything that they've got coming to them, I hope they get it. I, frankly, have had enough of all this blaming the working men and women for everything that's going on in this country. We've heard that nothing but that since they've been talking about this bailout, and that's what it is, loan bailout. Call it what you want to for the big three. They're starting to talk about cutting wages again for the big three. Hey, they've already agreed. The union already agreed to this second tier wage of $14.50 an hour for any new hires. Do you know that's, and that'll all to take, you know, as the ones working there now gradually retire, the people in the auto plants won't be making squat. The union had to agree to that. The second tier wage agreement is $14.50 an hour for new hires. Do you know that's lower than the pay for the non-union foreign-owned auto companies in the South? Did you know that? And here we have these people up on Capitol Hill. Oh, they all got $70 an hour. It's not true. Go up and take a look at Flint, Michigan. Go take a look at Detroit, Michigan. Go take a look at all the places that depended on the auto industry and see what's happening to them now. We had an automakers group in Washington that from the years 1994 to 2003, get this, made $104 billion in profits. 9 years, they made $104 billion in profit. What did they do with it? Did they go out and spend the money they should have to come up with green automobiles and fuel-efficient automobiles? No. Token efforts at that, yes. And they probably, for my money, spent more money on advertising those token projects than they ever really did on designing more fuel-efficient cars. Why? Because they made a lot of money off the gas guzzlers, the SUVs and all that. Lots of money. So now they talk about, well, let's cut the wages of these people in the UAW. They're just making too much money, and they're doing a good job of getting that message out to everybody in the country. That's as good a propaganda as I've heard in a long time about these people making $70 an hour. They've got a lot of people convinced of that. Oh, I wonder a lot of times, just... I wonder how smart we actually are. But they're once again, they're talking that the big three, well, the union's got to, you know, they got to cut their wages. That $70 an hour is just too much. What is it, 1.8 million so far this year? Jobs we've lost, something like that. Got to change sometime soon. Hey, I do hope that those of you listening now that weren't here when we started the program today, I guess you don't, I won't know how you'll hear it unless I repeat it to you. Did want to mention that this was the day we celebrated 6 years of the Guy James Show. And it's a difficult time for the program, as it is for many of you and many other working people in the country. And it's getting harder and harder to pay the bills around here for that every day. And we hope you will consider helping out with it. As I mentioned earlier in the program today, I am in a position of telling all my audience, if this program isn't worth a few bucks a month to you to hear the program, then it probably is not going to be possible for me to do it anymore. And it's, as I said, it's not my decision. It'll be your decision. And I'm sorry, but that's the practical part of it. And without a significant change in funding, the studio is going to have to go dark at the end of January. So that's important for you to know that. I hope you do understand that. I hope if you are able to help, we have checked out just about every avenue that we can for funding for the program. And the parties and the political organizations and all them really don't give a damn when it comes down to it. So that's the way it is, and we'll have to contend with that. So no more belly aching. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the program. I appreciate it very much, and once again, I want to thank everyone who does contribute to the program. There's a couple of you right there right now in the chat room that I want you to know appreciate very, very much what you do, very much, and have done. Thanks for listening. I'm going to close out the program today with another John Lennon song. You've been listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Tomorrow, gang.